Scorpions Avenue. We're about to get into part two of LeVar Burton, but we are also getting into part two of the Smart, Funny, and Black Tour. Last year, we hit y'all with the Lituation 101 Tour, and we are back again this year with the You Know the Vibonics 101 Tour, hitting more cities than we did last year. If you don't know what Smart, Funny, and Black is, it's my live Black pop culture comedy game show that we take to your city, and we bring two guests that compete in games that I have written that test their knowledge of Black culture, Black history, and the Black experience. Honestly, y'all, it's the best Blackest time you've ever had in your life. Even Rebecca and Brandon had the best Blackest time they've ever had in their life. And the reality is that we got to show folks that this is the content that you want. We got to show folks that this is the type of things that you want to come to your city. So don't wait till a week before to get your tickets. No, plan ahead, get your tickets now. Let these promoters know that this is the show that you want to come see, and they will bring you more stuff like this. Smart, Funny, and Black, the You Know the Vibonics 101 Tour. Tickets on sale now. Go to smartfunnyandblack.com for yours and have a moment of ebony excellence. Yeah.
Self-help from the hip.
Small doses.
We're talking that shit.
Small doses.
And keeping it real.
Small doses.
With me and them seals.
It's so funky. How have you been in show business so long and to our knowledge remain so sane? We haven't heard a LeVar Burton scandal story.
And hopefully you will not.
Dick Gregory didn't have a scandal story.
Right.
Did you ever meet Dick Gregory?
Yes, I did.
Dick was a special
yes, he was.
Man.
Yes, he
but
was.
But you never heard a scandal story.
No.
He might yell at you. Yeah. He will yell at you. Yeah. Dick Gregory and I got an argument.
Did you?
Because he was telling somebody about how if you look on the $2 bill, there are Black men signing the Declaration of Independence. And I was like, I don't. So what you're saying is, and he was like, I'm talking right now. Do not interrupt me when I'm talking. I'll get to you when I get to you. And
oh,
I was like,
my.
Brother,
wow.
I can't take it.
Okay.
And we had just done a moderated conversation where like both him and I were on stage as equals, which also, by the way, is foolishness. But
there you are.
But I'll take it.
Yes, indeed.
And you know, so we had a certain level of familiarity that happened from just being on that stage. And then that's when you remember like, oh, you were old man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I just had to exit because I was like, you are not about to get into a fucking back and forth with Dick Gregory up
in
this school.
Not Uncle Dick Gregory.
No. And the brother that was in the room was just like, he gave me that look like, sister, I'm with you, but I can't.
Yeah. I can't go there.
I can't even do it. So just take your leave and I'll cover for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do you think has kept you not even afloat, but solid footed? Or enlighten us. Was there a point where you just were like, I lost my way?
Yeah. Near the beginning. It was overwhelming. Yeah, it was overwhelming.
What exactly was overwhelming? The fame?
The
or?
Fame, the attention. I was on the cover of Time magazine at the age of 19.
Crispus Attucks.
And everywhere I went, and I mean I did promotional tours for Roots in Italy, Japan, Amsterdam, I traveled the world, and the attention was intense for a 19-year-old to process. Digest.
It's also trippy that you were in a film where one of the cornerstone, like poignant moments of the film is your adherence to your name.
Yeah.
I'm Kunta. But right. Then in real life,
yeah,
you are now stripped of your name, LeVar.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, you're Kunta. And like having to like flip
switch. I had to embrace that too. I had to stare down the possibility that the most successful thing I will ever do as an actor, I have done at the age of 19.
That's wild.
I had to deal with all of that. I had to reconcile it. I had to make space for it in my life. And in order to do that, I needed to be still. And I wasn't still. I was kind of frantic. It was the 70s, though. You know?
Touché. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there were substances involved.
The whisper voice. There were substances involved. There were things that took us to places. We came back.
We did. And thank God. And I'm really grateful for that. And I'm grateful to have been able to come back to what turned out to be a pretty firm foundation that was provided by my mother, Irma Jean.
Moms. Mm-hmm. So then you get, you do a couple other projects, mm-hmm. then you land Star Trek. Did you know?
Reading Rainbow came before Star Trek.
Did you know, though, when you did Reading Rainbow, though, that it was going to be iconic?
No, not at all.
Right.
I just thought it was a good idea.
And did you pitch Reading Rainbow, or did they come to you?
They came to me.
Got you.
Yeah.
And then, I'm just curious, like, what made them come to you?
I was on my way to Africa, and was...
Wait, do you know that I have a joke about this?
What?
Shut up that you were on your way to Africa. Okay, I have a character named Topher Shanks.
Topher Shanks?
Topra.
Topher Shanks. Okay.
Topher Shanks.
Topher Shanks.
I'm going to show you this video when we leave.
Okay.
I have a character named Topher Shanks who's a guru.
All right.
She's a mix of Oprah and Tyra Banks. Topher Shanks. And then put in Ayanla Vanzant.
Oh my, my. We're helping people. We're saving lives. We're healing. We're healing the world.
We're healing. Glow on, goddess. And I have a web series that I did called Get Your Life. And
in Starring Topra?
Yes.
Okay.
And in the show, like my character, Amanda, has to like be a part of this film that she's like, this feels like it's going, the film is called Negropolis. So she's already like, what is this bullshit? And she takes the job because Topra had like called her and was like, I want you to be in my film. And she's like, fine. But she knows it's some bullshit. So she's at the table read. And at the table read, everyone's so obsessed with Topra that they're not even admitting that this is trash.
This script
and then
is
Topra
not
like
good.
Addresses everybody. And when she addresses everybody, she tells them that she came up with the idea for this while she was on vacation in Africa. With her husband, uh-huh. and they were on a tour down the Nile being led by LeVar Burton.
Get the fuck out of here. That's crazy.
And here you come. Well, I was on my way to Africa. And then she proceeds. Then wow. she proceeds to sing Reading Rainbow.
What?
Yes. So when you're sitting here telling me that, I'm like, get.
Wow.
Get out of here. So you were on your way to Africa.
And there used to be on the news on NBC Live at 5 with Sue Simmons. In the middle of the news, they'd have this black woman interviewing celebrities, which was really cool. And I was sitting there talking to Sue Simmons.
I like her name.
Yeah,
Sue Simmons.
Sue
Live
Simmons.
At 5 with Sue Simmons.
Live at 5 with Sue Simmons. Simmons. New York staple back in the day. And they tracked me down. They found me at my hotel and pitched the show to me over the phone before I left town. And when I came back from Africa, we shot the pilot.
So you go from there
mm-hmm.
to then, again, like when y'all start, because Star Trek Next Generation was already, you know, on the heels of the Star Trek franchise
mm-hmm.
that was already a win.
Yeah.
So did you all know, because it was the first one.
We were the first iteration post the original series, yeah.
So did you all know
that it was going to blow up like that?
That people would rock with it?
No, we did not. In fact, there was quite a bit of blowback at the beginning. A lot of press about people who didn't have room in their hearts for another Star Trek cast because they were so loyal to Kirk and his crew.
Right.
And then inevitably the story would become, and one day I was sitting there flipping and I stopped and I got hooked because I recognized that it was pretty good storytelling, right? And I was kind of skeptical about some of that blowback when we were premiering as well, because for me, I was a Star Trek fan. My family and I,
That was my next question. Were you a Star Trek fan
huge
before?
Huge Star Trek fans. My mother, my sisters, myself, we used to watch it all the time. Look, I grew up in the 50s and 60s.
Right.
So seeing black people on television was really important because there were very few instances where we could see ourselves on television that wasn't the nightly news talking about body counts in the Vietnam War or crime in the inner cities. Star Trek had a black woman in the command structure on the bridge. and was responsible for the first interracial kiss on television in America. Star Trek was radically progressive. Star Trek had a...
That's so wow. Just...
It had an Asian man and a Russian... During the height of the Cold War.
Oh, you know what?
There was a Russian man on the bridge. See, that was the thing.
I never thought about that.
Star Trek was radically...
Wait, no, not Scotty. Chekhov.
And Sulu. Chekhov. Talk about Chekhov. Yeah. Chekhov. And Sulu was the Asian. So... I loved Star Trek. And when I was approached about coming into audition, I only had one question. Is Gene Roddenberry involved? Because I figured if Gene Roddenberry was involved, then it had a shot of being good.
Legit. How do you like the new Star Treks?
I have not seen Discovery yet. I haven't seen Disco yet.
I've heard really good things
about it. I've met some of the cast members. My brother, Jonathan Frakes, is directed over there.
Okay.
He speaks very highly of all of them. I've had a couple of meetings with Alex Kurtzman. We're talking about a couple of things. He's the man that has the keys to the Star Trek kingdom right now.
You are also a director.
Yeah.
This is how I met you.
Yes, that's true.
We were... in the airport.
Yeah, I was on my way to New Orleans, and you were on your way to New Orleans to make a speech at, I think, Tulane. And I was on my way to direct NCIS. NOLA.
So how's the directing going?
Love directing.
As a storyteller.
Yeah, it's great. It's hard to have more fun with your clothes on. It really is.
Hilarious.
Because for me, directing is as much about leadership as it is about vision.
Please speak to that. Leadership.
I see it as a job that requires really solid leadership skills. You have to get 140 people all moving in the same direction at the same time.
Yes.
All pulling to achieve the same goal. You can't do that without somebody taking the lead. Now, whether it's an assistant director or a producer or the person who's supposed to be at the head of the ship, the director. The power abhors a vacuum. Somebody's going to fill in.
Power abhors
a vacuum.
I just also want to point out, the reason why you hear me calling out words, because it's the only way you're really going to get a vocabulary. People on the show always talk about my vocabulary.
You read.
And that's it.
You read.
That's it. And people are always like, how'd you get all these words? And it's like, because I read.
I read them.
And then I
looked them up. And then I applied them to my own conversations. It's not rocket science, y'all.
But those steps are no longer really taught. A friend of mine was on a date. And she heard the guy on the date say, man, that was a real Fox pass. And she was like, she hadn't been paying attention to anything he had been saying up until that point.
And that got her attention.
And she was like, I'm sorry, can you just say that one more time for me? And he said, it's a real Fox pass. And she was like, do you mean faux pas?
Oh, I suppose he did. Yeah.
And he was like,
Is that how you pronounce it?
And she spelled it on a napkin.
Yeah. And he said, oh.
And he was like, oh yeah.
Uh-huh.
Fox pass. She was like, wow. It's faux pas. And she was like, That was an adult
in that conversation.
She was like, did you ever see the word off the page? Like, have you ever? And he was like, no. Like, he had never
done the diligence. And never looked it up. But he had context for the... for the definition.
And that's the bugged out part of it. Right. So he got that right. So like he had the context right, but he didn't have the like the simple just
pronunciation.
He hadn't taken that step. And I just thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
But I think that like I get scared, LeVar, about how far we've gone with lacking of reading and like just our kids and their disconnection with reading as a value. And I keep saying this because I think that it's become so positioned as just like a thing you do at school.
Yeah.
Exactly. A thing you do for school.
Yeah.
That like, if you don't have value beyond it.
That's deadly. See, I grew up in a household where my mother was always reading for her own personal enjoyment.
My mother, too.
2-3 books at a time. I mean, concurrently, simultaneously reading 2 or 3 stories, keeping it all straight in her head. And so I grew up knowing that my mother didn't just read to me, she read in front of me. And that's how I learned the importance of the written word, through her example. People ask me all the time, how do I get to keep my kid to read more? I ask them two questions. Number one, do you know what your child is passionate about? Because it is our passions that tend to drive our reading appetites, right? Number two, do your kids see you reading?
Right.
Because if they don't, it won't take on the importance that you, I believe you want it to have in their lives.
That's major, because I really saw my mom reading my whole life.
Of course.
Yeah.
I grew up in a house where reading was like breathing, you know?
And not just reading magazines.
No. We took two newspapers when I was a kid. And I went to Catholic school, so we were always having magazine subscription drives, you know, trying to raise money for this, right, that, and the other. We were encouraged to go to the library.
Yes.
Libraries are underutilized resources in this country. Libraries are awesome.
Even just as a space, it just feels good in a library. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
I do.
So, like, remember when Samwell Tarly,
yeah,
walked into,
right,
the library?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
The Citadel, yeah, down.
Yeah.
And you're just like, because the books around you just, I don't know what it is. It's like books are spirits.
They are, and they're magic.
Books and records,
they,
for me.
They just want to give up their secrets. All you've got to do is know how to crack the code.
So my graduate thesis was that the hip hop album is a continuation of the African American narrative.
Yes, agreed.
Because
in the vein of jazz and rock and roll.
Well, the hip hop album specifically, I connected it to actually the literary narrative.
Got
because
it. Call and response.
Well, just in terms of telling stories.
Telling
like
stories.
Storytelling is an integral part of hip hop that I feel,
absolutely,
like is being lost,
right,
in the same way that we're talking about reading being lost.
Chronicling our lives.
Yes.
Right. Got it.
And like the importance of Black folks specifically telling our own stories,
yes,
versus our stories being told by those
other people
who are not of us or for us.
Right.
Right. And so.
Right. And don't certainly don't understand us.
And don't even try.
And
you know,
don't even try.
Which is why I created Smart Funny in Black, which I like. One day you have to come and do Smart Funny,
yes,
in Black.
Like, I'd love to.
I mean, it's on record. Smart Funny in Black is my Black pop culture game show, but it's that's the bottom line of it. But really, what it is it's a Black cultural experience that takes Black culture to church. It feels like a revival. It feels they've been there, and they're both like, yeah, like it feels like. I don't even know. It's just the blackest shit you've ever been to.
Okay.
And you were in Roots.
I was, yes.
Mm-hmm. You've been the answer of questions on the damn show. So there's
okay.
That.
All right.
But just in terms of the Black literary canon.
Yes.
You know, in getting into just the importance of reading those particular titles.
Yeah.
And what it means to have value there. Like for MCs, you know, I come out of hip hop and like I know so many MCs who realize that they became better MCs when they started reading.
Of course.
Like it was like, oh shit, I don't need to read because of school. I need to read because I'll just be a better rapper.
Because I have something I want to say and it,
yes,
will help me express myself.
Yes.
Duh.
And it's like, why do you think though that, I mean, is it enough to say that it's the scholastic attachment that makes people, that would make someone so like not consider that? Because you're like saying duh, but I think for them it's not even a duh. It's just like a, I had no idea.
I think it is a legacy. I honestly do believe this to be an aspect of the legacy of slavery, which we all know is racism. There has been, where the education of its citizens of color are concerned, a concerted effort on the government of the United States to provide, only when forced, what passes as the legal definition of a comparable education for Black kids. And
you better talk
kids,
up in here, LeVar Burton.
As we have traditionally provided for white kids, we have failed miserably at that obligation, which we took upon ourselves. But again, we have to understand that the history of America is one where we are often talking out of the sides of our neck as a nation. in our dealings with other countries, in our dealing with our own past and history, we still have trouble acknowledging that we stole this country from the native inhabitants of the indigenous people who were here before we got here. Those us being the European hordes that came and settled on a mandate by God.
Right. By God, by the same God that said, enslave those folks.
Hello. And then sell them religion, right? And then sell them Jesus.
Well, you know, interpretation of things is for me where reading gets scary. The many ways that like the Quran can be interpreted. Sure. The many ways that the Bible can be interpreted, yeah. And the way that the ability to read has been wielded as a weapon.
As a weapon. That's right. That's right. So I think that there is in the Black community, there's a stigma about education. There's a stigma about being able to learn how to read. And it's not a positive one, generally. It's negative. And because if you are a reader, then you are probably an articulate speaker. You know how to use the English language effectively. And if you do that, then you just talk in white.
Well, you're talking to an Oreo here.
Hello.
So check out our episode, Side Effects of an Oreo, starring Broadway's Michael James Scott, currently playing Aladdin's genie on Broadway right now.
Public service announcement brought to you by Amanda Seals.
I don't think you really truly understand how much. Do you know how much you're loved?
I don't. It's not something I focus on.
Not focus. I'm saying,
no,
do you
but
know?
I feel like I have an inkling. Yeah, but I don't know that I could ever know the magnitude because I could
you
never get
to.
Everybody in the same place at the same time.
Well, a lot of them feels right here on this podcast.
Okay. Well.
Well, I just say that because I want to make sure you get your flowers.
Yes, that much. It has been one of the joys of the last decade or so, encountering that the generation of young people of color who grew up on Reading Rainbow, because I wasn't sure they were out there.
Mm.
Right. I wasn't sure how much PBS actually penetrated into households. What I've come to find out is PBS was for people who were really, really poor, some of the only TV they ever got.
Literally.
Right? So that connection that I have runs a lot deeper in the Black community than I ever anticipated. Because I expected it from Roots, but it never really materialized. Because Black people were conflicted about Roots. Right? They were conflicted about yet again, here is the story being brought up and put in our faces. Can't we just not talk about it? I say we got to talk about it until we acknowledge it. I mean, not just the Black people in America, but the white people in America as well. Right? We don't stop talking. We don't stop telling the Holocaust story, do we?
Never.
Never.
Because it's a story that shouldn't stop being told.
This is what I'm saying. It's why I was involved in the remake of Roots. Because I believe it's important to continue that story, to keep it alive in this culture.
Shout out to Kofi.
Right?
What do you say to the writers listening? Who are either in the process of penning something.
Yes.
Or in the process of building up the courage.
Yeah, to write something.
Yes.
I'm going to challenge you to up your reading game. Because it will make you a better writer.
I think it'll even make you a more courageous writer.
Yeah. At the very least, it can help connect you to your imaginative self, to that divine spark. Inspiration, right? From the Latin, inspire, to breathe in. You can't inspire, right? You can't connect with divine energy unless you are what? Breathing.
You just gave me a whole word. Inspire.
Inspire. To inspire. To breathe in.
I never knew that it came from breathe in.
That's correct. Breathe in is inspire, and it's the root of inspire or inspiration. To breathe in, to connect with the divine spark. That's how it happens.
Gosh darn it. It's always a joy when shit lives up to and exceeds what you hoped it would be.
Amanda Seals.
You know, if you came up in here and were like, I don't really talk much, I'd be like, God damn it, LeVar Burton. We've been waiting for this for 2 years.
You know, there was very little chance of that happening. You've met me before.
My last question for you actually is, how do you choose the books that you read on
the
your
show,
podcast?
Yeah. I have the best producer in the business, Julia Marie Smith, and she sends me...
Actually, I don't know, because I've got some pretty... Okay. Pretty good folks right
here. Present company excluded. My bad. Apologies. Julia sends me so many suggestions. You know, the problem with the show is that I have to keep the format under an hour. Mm. Right? So I do an introduction.
Yeah.
I introduce the story, I read the story, and then I do a postscript on the story, and all in, you know, within
a finite amount of time.
So it eliminates a lot of the stories. In fact, I'm going to do a two-parter this season to accommodate a story that's just so good I can't not read it, and it's too long for one episode.
I like that you do the characters. You know, it's not just LeVar Burton reads is not it's not just you reading.
No, it's me reading aloud, which is my favorite way of storytelling.
But it's literally like a one-man table read.
Yeah.
I mean, you're giving us characters.
Yes.
Like,
I'm interpreting the author's words. I'm interpreting the author's vision. But I'm doing it with my voice. I'm editorializing in terms of the emphasis that I put on words and the words that I de-emphasize. Because I'm telling the story. Right? I'm assuming the character of the storyteller, and I'm speaking their words for the audience. That's an interpretation, which I think is the purest form, because it's you, the text, and a listening ear.
Now, you've said in this podcast that, you know, we have to tell our stories.
Yeah.
Why?
It's the one thing I think that we can all agree upon that connects us as human beings. Like music, right? Mm-hmm. Music has a connecting factor. Mm-hmm. Storytelling does too. And at the end of the day, it's the only way we can get to know one another so that we can discover the commonality that we have and de-emphasize where we feel like we're not alike.
Is the commonality in the fact that just on a basic bottom line, we all have a story?
Yes, and that we are a species that is designed to tell stories.
Are we?
Yeah, we are. Look at our senses, you know, touch, taste. I mean, the storytelling mode of moving pictures and sound is the most sophisticated tool for shaping and influencing consciousness ever created in the history of civilization. Moving pictures and sound really capitalizes on the human instrument where it lives, right?
Hmm.
Moving pictures and sound. That's why movies are so powerful.
Yeah,
that's why
TV is so powerful.
The storytelling done in a visual medium like that, it just goes to the essence of what human beings are in terms of being a sensory organ.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, that's why I say storytelling connects us all. It reminds us about our common humanity. It's something that we all have in common.
Well, all of us on this show have in common a deep admiration, respect, and love for the... What's your middle name?
My name is actually Levardis. Levardis.
It just got better.
Yeah.
It just got better. Levardis?
Levardis is my name. How black is that name?
That is the most Negro name. Levardis. Levardis, come here and wash these dishes. Levardis, you get your ass over here.
Yep.
They just sent Levardis out to get a switch.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I had to go get the belt.
Levardis going to get the...
I had to go get the belt.
Levardis.
Levardis. L-E-V-A-R-D-I-S.
Levardis.
Levardis. That's right. Levardis. Robert Martin Burton.
They put Robert in the middle.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
And like, we're going to smooth it out.
Yeah. Right? And then I took Martin. I used to be a Catholic, so when I was confirmed as a teenager, I took Martin. You're supposed to take the name of a saint. There weren't any black saints. But there was a blessed Martin Depore. He's a saint now. But he wasn't a saint then.
But he's a black saint now.
He's a black saint now.
They was like, we need to get in.
Martin Depore. Yeah, he was the first. He was the first. It took a long time. He was the first black saint. Yeah. He was canonized in the 80s,
I believe. What?
70s or 80s? Yeah, 80s. Yeah.
They got a brother in the mix.
Now.
There's so many jokes going on in my head right now about what that did for heaven.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, made it legit. Up there like, yeah. We need to get some hot sauce for this communion.
Yeah.
this bread is just, Jesus, come on, man. You know.
Come on, where the chicken
spice
at?
Spice it up.
Where the chicken at?
Where the chicken
where
at?
Where the chicken at, Jesus?
Well, Lavardus, that is the best. Now, I mean, now I feel like we're so much closer.
Fish calls me Lavardus. Very few people call me Lavardus. Lawrence Fishburne calls me Lavardus.
Why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, that's even better because he has the linguistics to handle Lavardus.
Fish knows what's up. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're one of the greats. We are honored to have you.
It's a pleasure, really.
Here
genuinely.
On
genuinely.
Small Doses.
Yeah.
And the book, the literary component of this podcast is coming out October 22nd. So only fitting that we would have you.
October 22nd. It's now. Okay. So, you know, it's time to pre-order, isn't it?
Soon.
Okay.
Yes. The cover was announced this week.
Oh, nice.
So we are... I am entering the literary realm.
Good for you.
320 pages.
Nice.
It almost killed me. Because you think you can write a book until you try to write a book. And you're like, oh, I'm not as adept or disciplined or anything that I thought I was.
It is the hardest thing I do, writing. Because it's solitary and very lonely and the night is full of terrors.
You better say it. The night is dark
and full of terror.
Full of terrors. Yeah. Well, Vlamogulas. thank you again for joining us.
Yeah.
And you can check out LeVar's podcast.
LeVar Burton Reads,
wherever
you get your podcasts.
Wherever you get your podcasts. It's a great podcast, especially if those of you who are out there and you're like, I need to read more, but I don't get a chance to sit down and read. Well,
let me read you a story.
Yeah.
Let me read you a story.
It's kind of a Cliff's Notes.
Yeah.
It's kind of a...
it's just another way to enjoy literature, really.
It really is.
Yeah, because I'm a big fan of audiobooks. I love audiobooks.
People keep telling me, like, you better do an audiobook for your book. And it's like...
Yeah. You will read your own book and you will fall in love.
I don't know about that, but I will read it. I will read it. They're already like, what's the next book? I'm like, ma'am.
Let me take a nap.
My agent is like, so what's the ideas? I'm like, but now I'm so mad at myself because now I've gotten very... I don't know. I've just gotten very in love with the idea of writing a novel. And I'm like, so you trying to write something even harder than what you wrote before?
Good.
Great,
that's,
Amanda.
That's awesome. I'm very proud of you. Follow that impulse.
Now I got
to
do it.
Lavardus. Yeah. Now you have
told
to do
me.
It.
And for the record, y'all, Lavardus is sitting up here with a fitted. And on the back of the hat, it says HNIC. Just so we're clear on who's here. Just so we're clear on who's here.
LB on the front.
The front says LB! Wait, can I get this on camera, please?
My wife's gonna hate this moment.
The front says LB. Hold on, let me get my... Here we go with Mr. LeVar Burton. The front says LB, but the back says... Ah! All the brothers in the house! All the brothers in the house, let me hear you!
Let's not get it twisted, okay?
This is the best day of my life.
Well, Amanda Seals, behold then the only thing greater than yourself.
We didn't even cover Lion King! Oh my God!
Oh boy.
All right.
This was fun.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Amanda.
And for the record, I feel like I need you involved in the next Black Panther. So I need you to work on that.
I am trying to work on that.
Thank you.
I want to be in the next Black Panther too.
Yeah, I'm too light skinned, so I've already let that go. I've come to my peace with that.
Right.
But that means that I need all my brothers and sisters of a darker shade to get the. I need you. I just need you in there.
I'm holding out some hope that they might give Quinta some love.
I didn't even think of it that way. It only makes sense.
Right?
It only makes sense. Ugh.
Just saying. Right.
Well, I feel like this is, I could do this for another 2 hours and we can't. So thank you so much. Again, listen to LeVar's podcast, LeVar Burton Reads. And, you know, if you're out there and you're thinking about something to read, here's some options. A book I just read that I continue to talk about, this book, Homegoing. Really enjoyed the book. You know, the person I'm seeing, he asked, he was like, give me some books that I can read that I will find interesting, but that ain't about like some street shit, you know, that mm-hmm. ain't about some hood shit.
Great.
And so the books that like my fingertips just kind of navigated to were James Baldwin's If Beale Street Could Talk.
You cannot go wrong.
You can never go wrong with James.
James Baldwin.
He was reading the titles of James Baldwin books, and one of them was Giovanni's Room, and he was like, yo, that's crazy, because I have a cousin named Giovanni, and his room ain't shit. His room is always messy as shit, and I always find myself going, y'all need to handle Giovanni's room, because that shit is smelling up the whole house. And here we go.
There's a book called Giovanni's Room. And that's a sign.
Then I also brought out Chinua Achebe, When yep. Things Fall Apart.
Sure.
Which is a beautiful. Classic and yep. beautifully written book. Mm-hmm. I brought out Sam Greenlee, of course, what we just talked about, Spook Who Sat by the Door. Yep. And I brought out Octavia Butler, Kindred.
Kindred. Anything by Octavia. Anything by
yes.
Octavia.
And Octavia is one of those unique, she's an incredibly unique writer yeah. in that she is very authentically Black and yeah. very authentically sci-fi.
Yes, she is.
And you're like, how do those two worlds come together? Because oftentimes in sci-fi, Black people are not there unless they're wearing a visor.
Octavia Butler is huge for me. She was the first person to point out to me how living the Black experience is science fiction. Yeah.
Ain't it though?
Yes, we are the other. Always are, always will be in this culture, the other. And our lived experience is that of science fiction.
Well, see y'all next time. You don't got to take my word for it.
Mine either.
Ba-dum-bum.
The Last Dose.
Ah! That happened! That happened. Woo! Y'all ain't fucking with me, man. Shit.
Starbands Avenue, a podcast network.